And good morning. Good morning. It is about 5 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn, and that was Beats Antique for a nice little morning roustabout.
You know, I'm rousted. Okay. I love that song. I could listen to that song every morning. Okay, I do listen to the song actually a lot of mornings, but that's me. That's how I wake up. Good morning, everyone. This is Positively Revolting, and today we are going to be talking about forest issues. Before we really launch into that, and goodness knows this will probably work itself in the conversation again later on, but wanted to start off with just a little announcement, and that is next Wednesday, February 29th, F29 is the day of action to shut down corporations. Listeners to our show have heard us talk about this probably through the last 5 or 6 weeks now, and, well, the day is upon us. It's next Wednesday, February 29th. There is a march and rally. You can join folks at Waterfront Park at Southwest Ankeny, where the Saturday market is. 11:30 in the morning is a rally. 1 o'clock is a march. It is a day where affinity groups may be taking direct action. There will be all manner of activities from, you know, people observing the activities, people participating in the rally and march, people participating in affinity groups doing direct action. Again, all focused on shutting down the corporations. You can get more information about this on the web at portlandactionlab.org. That's certainly one place to learn about it. There are a whole lot of places that have information on the web about F29. So do avail yourself of that information. So that was my before announcement. So welcome. We are, like I said, here to discuss forest issues this morning. And to help us do that, we have a couple of folks from BARC. And we have Olivia Schmidt, the program director. Good morning, Olivia.
Good morning, Ani. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And we have Brenna Bell, the BARC NEPA coordinator and staff attorney.
Good morning.
And wait, I had to ask, are all these initials?
I had to ask what NEPA was right before we went on the air, but go ahead. Let us know.
NEPA is the National Environmental Policy Act, which is basically one of the environmental charters for the country that allows, or rather forces, government to tell the people what the environmental impacts of their actions will be, and then allows for public comment and response on those actions. So it means the government, it's not a substantive law. The government could say, we're going to pave the whole forest, and NEPA wouldn't stop them. They would just have to disclose all of the impacts of paving the whole forest. They're spectacularly bad at this.
And we'll hear more about how bad they are at that.
Yes.
And what is this BARC thing of which you speak?
Yeah, let's start off with that. Can you describe to our listeners, what is BARC?
Sure. BARC, we are the defenders of Mount Hood National Forest. A lot of people often ask me, what does BARC stand for? BARC is a word that means persistent outcry, and that is what we do about what's happening on our public lands, specifically Mount Hood National Forest and the surrounding public lands. BARC's been around for about 12 years. We're located in Portland, but a lot of the work we do is actually in the forest. We do things like we have a second Sunday BARC About hike on the second Sunday of every month. We bring folks out into the forest, and we take them to beautiful places that are threatened, and also to places that have already been damaged by actions by the Forest Service. We offer free public trainings on NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, which Brenna actually offers. We do something called ground truthing, where we actually go out and sort of our version of a civilian survey, where we look at what is being proposed by the Forest Service. We go out into the actual land that would be impacted and sort of reference what we're seeing on the ground with what's being reported in the documentation by that government agency.
So I'm going to stop you right there, yeah. Because let's explore what that means a little bit more. The government agency writes reports about the conditions of the forest when they're looking at any action within the forest or forest management plans, and they report what they find. Habitat, different species, riparian zones, all of these sort of things. Why would a bunch of, well, citizens not working for an agency, not experts in the field, perhaps, need to do something called ground truthing?
Well, a lot of reasons. The first of which is just kind of a fundamental thing, which is, you know, we are the public. It's our land. We have the right to know what is happening there and to be familiar with that that place. But more sort of concerning is that what we often find is that what's being reported in those documents is not what's happening on the ground. We often have things come up like we'll have ground truthers in a proposed timber sale, and they'll find a creek that wasn't listed on a map for that timber sale, or a road that, you know, is on the map as something that is accessible when in fact it's a road that's been decommissioned and is now overgrown and recovering beautifully, that's going to actually require the timber company that ultimately gets that sale or the Forest Service itself to do maintenance or reopen that road. So it's a little bit like fact checking. And what we often find is that the facts are just not accurate.
Mm-hmm. And I'll say that's especially true for the kind of sales that we're seeing now in the forest that are getting bigger and bigger and bigger and often spanning thousands of acres. And it's literally impossible for the Forest Service to go out there and actually check on the ground what is going on each of those acres. The recent Jazz timber sale that we've been challenging is over 2,000 acres. And BARC volunteers, who are amazingly awesome, spent over 600 hours scouring that sale and got to 80 of the 82 units. And we only didn't get to 2 units because they were completely inaccessible because they're for helicopter yarding. But that was an enormous amount of time and effort put into that, and it's way more than the Forest Service can do. So the agency is actually planning sales that it is incapable of checking. And we need to be there to be a backstop because it's missing a lot. And even when it does check them, honestly, the information that comes out isn't very high quality. And so we have to check that as well.
So sparse information and inaccurate information being checked by citizen activists is what I'm hearing.
Exactly, and that information that comes back from the field by our volunteers makes its way into our comments and our considerations about how we challenge those timber sales if they're, you know, illegal.
Well, and one of the current sales that you're looking at is the Jazz sale. And
such a nice name for such a horrible thing.
Right.
Can you let our listeners know about the Jazz timber area? It's in the Kalawash watershed?
Yeah, that's right. The Jazz timber sale is a 2,000-acre timber sale that spans 30 square miles of Mount Hood National Forest. It actually impacts an entire watershed, the Kalawash watershed, which is a part of Clackamas County drinking water watershed. What we're seeing is this tendency by Mount Hood, by the Forest Service, to plan these massive timber sales that are probably problematic for a variety of reasons. The expansiveness of their impact, like these watershed-wide impacts, the real challenge for the public to actually get out and see what's happening on the ground. Like Brenda said, we spent 600 volunteer hours monitoring that sale. It's not every citizen or resident that is capable of spending that time out there, you know, especially if they're not connected with a group like BARC. So, you know, we have a lot of concerns about that proposal, one of which is that the Jazz timber sale would actually reopen 11 miles of previously decommissioned roads. So the funds and the human resources have been spent to take roads off the landscape or to close them.
And why is that important environmentally? Why are roads a big deal in the forests?
Well, roads are a big deal generally because they are a chronic source of sediment into watersheds. As long as they stay on the landscape, the Forest Service is unable to maintain them all. There's a huge backlog of road maintenance, and unmaintained roads often are continually washing sediment into these creeks. But that's especially important in the Kalawash watershed because it is the most geologically unstable watershed in the entire Mount Hood National Forest. It's on something that's called an earth flow, which is a huge, slow-moving river of earth. And so roads on it, actually, we have amazing pictures of roads. They buckle and they crunch as the earth is actually moving. So when these roads are on the landscape in the Kalawash, they're moving and shifting, and all of that sediment is then draining into something that's not only a drinking watershed, but it's a very important salmon habitat. One of the last wild steelhead runs in Mount Hood National Forest is in the Kalawash. So one of the most important thing, perhaps the most important thing we can do for restoration in the Mount Hood National Forest right now is to remove roads. And the Forest Service is actually doing that, which is why it's so incredibly ironic that at the same time that they're paying all this money to remove roads and indeed already have done it, that they're reopening these 11 miles of roads to allow for a timber sale that also, we should note, that they're couching in terms of restoration, which is hogwash.
Yeah, well, let's talk about restorative timber sales.
Yeah.
in reading, you can tell I can't find the right words for this one. In reading about the Jazz Timber Sale and some of the terms the Forest Service uses, all of a sudden, restoration of a forest means cutting trees.
Yes.
And, you know, I did a lot of forest work, say, 15 years ago. And I'm used to black and white sort of being equated up and down, being interchanged. And again, I'm seeing that sort of thing. Restoration of forests, I think to most of us, does not look like thinning it.
Right.
Can you explain a little bit more about the forest plan in restoring the Jazz Sale and how that's not working for you?
Sure, yeah. I'll talk about a little bit, and then I'll let Brenna talk a little about other impacts of thinning, which is sort of the new wave of timber production in Mount Hood National Forest and public lands. You know, we got we've made a lot of progress in getting away from massive old growth clear cuts. And so what we see is a general misunderstanding that logging that's happening now is for the health of the forest because they're taking, you know, smaller, younger trees. The problem is that it doesn't really matter the size or the number of trees that are being taken, the age of the trees that are being taken in these sales, because what's happening is they're having these massive impacts. The roads infrastructure, all the infrastructure it takes to cut and remove those trees. And the fact that these sales are being planned and promoted as restoration when they're having these impacts like reopening roads that are impacting water quality. We actually just last week settled a lawsuit about a variety of thinning sales where the Forest Service was basically ignoring a requirement to protect threatened salmon habitat in thinning sales. So in that situation, what we saw was they're planning these sales, they're calling them restoration, and then they're blatantly violating the requirement to protect endangered species mm-hmm. in those same sales. So, you know, if you think about a 2,000-acre timber sale with watershed-wide impacts, it's not hard to understand that, you know, a thinning timber sale is not restoring the forest. It's, in fact, having these devastating impacts.
Right?
Yes. Can I say something?
Sure. I want to let our listeners know okay. that that we are here, Positively Revolting. I'm Ani. I'm here with Lynn. And we have with us as our guests this morning Olivia Schmidt and Brenna Bell from Bark Defenders of Mount Hood Forest. And you, my dear friend and listener, can call 503-231-8187. If you would like to join us in the conversation this morning, please do. We would love to hear from you with your questions and comments around forest issues, questions for Bark, and defending the forests in our own backyard and around the state and the world. Okay, Brenna, go ahead.
All right. So, you know, like you, I've been doing forest activism for a while, and I have to admit, when I first went out to the Jazz Timber Sale, it took me a minute to get my head around, why is this bad? I'm like standing here and, you know, youngish trees, it's not a clear cut. And I was like, this isn't the Sunset Grove at Eagle. Like my heart isn't just like pounding inside my body. But I've had the luxury of time to really think about what it takes to remove a commercial product from the forest. Because at the heart of this, if they were just, you know, dropping a few trees and leaving them on the ground to become coarse woody debris and opening up the canopy a bit, I don't think Bark would be fighting as hard as we are. But what they're doing is a massive scale of commercial removal of a product. And when you get down to that, the infrastructure needed to remove the product is just as damaging for a big tree or a small tree. You need to create skid roads. You have tractor yarders, skyline corridors, landings, roads, all of which completely compact the soil and, you know, result in over 111 acres of clear cut inside this thinning to create that infrastructure just needed to remove the commercial product. And because it's so big, the impact is actually greater than if it was a smaller localized sale that took all the trees. It's pretty amazing that the biggest impact from the sale is specifically around the commercial timber sale aspect and removing those trees from the ecosystem. So the fact that they're couching it in terms of restoration when the removal of the commercial product has by far the biggest impact is perhaps the greatest irony of this.
Well, it seems almost this sort of thing is feeling normal to me, and I don't like that.
Right.
That type of funny speak, mm-hmm. you know, the Clean Air Act to dirty the air. What to Clean Air Act? Clean the sky of tree of birds, right? That sort of thing is I don't know. How do you feel do you guys, are you trying to reword things? Are you trying to get your own means? Or
We did. One of the terms that really annoys me is the term plantation.
Oh, yes.
And that's more truthful, though.
It is, in a way, but if you go into these forests, the meme we're reconstructing is replanted forest. Mm-hmm. Because it's true that at one time they were clear-cut and replanted.
But you can't plant a forest.
Right, but in the past 50 years, they have re-evolved, and they're actually really beautiful, young, thriving ecosystems. They're not like cottonwood plantations that you see on I-5, you know. They're actually forests. And to call them plantation thinnings, I think, loses the fact that they have already stepping into their powers, really thriving forest ecosystems. And perhaps the best thing we could do for restoration is decommission roads and then leave them alone.
And what's funny about that, you know, another example of that is, you know, timber sales being planned in Mount Hood right now are called thins. And we refer to them as timber sales because that is what they are. They're commercial timber sales for commercial product out of the natural resources that belong to the public. And I have to say, I've been kind of laughing over here because Brenna and I have this conversation in the office occasionally. She has this gut reaction, you know, she goes into these timber sales, into the forest to like the jazz timber sale and has that reaction of, you know, having to sink into what feels bad about this. And for me, I go in there and it's like, these are the forests that I'm used to seeing. This is what a forest looks like. You know, it's a wet, beautiful, healthy, vibrant ecosystem. And whether it's a replanted forest or a native forest, you know, this is the home to critters and mm-hmm. plants and to where we go as humans in the region to recreate and experience the wilderness. So it's a funny thing to think about, you know, like you're saying, they are replanted forests, but they are the forests that we have. And they are vibrant mm-hmm. ecosystems.
Well, I want to sort of get back to something that has been mentioned around the edges, and that is, so we're harvesting commercial products. They are timber sales. Who's benefiting? Like, financially, who benefits from the harvesting and perhaps even running amok of regulations and that sort of thing? Because it's certain. Doesn't seem to be the public.
Well, it's interesting you should say that. One of the problems that we've run into, you know, one of our visions that we have for Mount Hood National Forest is to have clean drinking water, healthy wildlife habitat, and quiet recreation be the management priorities for Mount Hood National Forest.
Those sound like really good priorities for public lands.
Yeah, and technically those are supposed to be managed for in Mount Hood. But what we see over and over again is that it's actually timber production and the timber program in Mount Hood and on public lands that gets primacy over those other resources that the forest has to offer. The problem is that the Mount Hood National Forest, the Forest Service, what we consistently hear is here's an example. So public quiet recreation. This is something that is losing funding at an astonishing rate. We see the privatization of management of campgrounds and popular recreation sites in Mount Hood. And the justification for the Forest Service doing that is that that program is losing money. But the reality is that the timber program is losing money too. It loses money every year and it grows annually. So, you know, the question about who's benefiting, it's not the public, it isn't the agency. At best, it's private timber companies. But something that has happened recently is with the economy being really low, what we've actually seen is that timber companies are bidding and purchasing timber sales in Mount Hood and then not logging them for years and years and extending and delaying their contracts because there just isn't a market for the product that's coming out of these national forests.
And some sales even just don't even have bidders. So the federal government spends hundreds of hours and hundreds of thousands of dollars planning these timber sales that there's not even a market for. And in some ways, they have to because their budget demands it. Like, that's one of the things that we're learning more and more is a lot of this is tied to the budget that Congress enforces on the federal agency. So it determines their priorities. And that priority continues to be timber production even when there's barely any local market for it and sales go no bid or have a bidder and then are just not logged. Mm-hmm. So there's actually a huge backlog right now of timber sales that have been purchased but not logged over the past 7 years. And kind of at any season, all of those could be cut at once, which will have an incredibly large cumulative impact, which is actually what, when we started thinking about that, that's what triggered our thinking that led to the endangered species lawsuit that Olivia just spoke about. Because we're really concerned, like, what would be the overall watershed impact of all of the backlog of sales being logged at once, especially on sensitive species like fish, who that sedimentation can really impact.
Well, yeah. So let's talk about that lawsuit. This is a lawsuit that was very recently won.
Yep.
From what I understand, so there were a number of sales that went through in 2007. And then from what I understand, and please do correct me, in 2009... another agency, the fisheries, the marine wildlife?
National Marine Fisheries Service.
Okay. I knew fish and marines were both in there. Had a new standard, put forth new regulations that said basically that a buffer zone, which had been 50 feet, now needed to be double in sensitive habitat areas. So a 100-foot buffer zone.
That's close.
Okay.
Close enough, I think.
All right. All right. Well, you know, here I am distilling down stuff. The Forest Service was choosing to ignore this 2-year-old edict.
Right.
How does that happen?
Well, it's the Forest Service.
Okay. I kind of thought that was a rhetorical question, but I had to ask it.
But it's true. So it's not only the Forest Service. It was the Mountain Hood National Forest, Willamette Forest, and Salem BLM. We also monitor the BLM lands because there's a lot of BLM lands in and around Mountain Hood. And the three agencies together joined to do a consultation because under federal law, under the Endangered Species Act, the agencies have the action agencies, which are the people who, you know, do the bad projects, have to consult with NMFS, or which is one of my favorite acronyms.
That I was going to say.
Yes.
Isn't that a great one?
I like that one.
They have to consult with NMFS and say, hey, NMFS, we're planning on doing these projects. What do you think about
who are NMFS?
The National Marine Fisheries Service.
Oh, of course. Okay.
That spoils it
now. Okay, whatever.
What do you think about the impacts of our project on salmon? And typically what we usually see is NMFS says, oh, we concur. We think it's fine. We actually think you're not going to have much of an impact. And in this case, it was 18,000 acres of timber sales over 22 watersheds, these thinning sales. And NMFS says, no, you know, we don't think we're going to have an impact. And that was in 2007. And then in 2009, the Forest Service came back and said, you know, we're planning on doing more timber sales using the same standards. We still don't think there's going to be an impact. And here's when NMFS said, they're like, actually, no, we've been checking the science, and we think that your buffers are inadequate. And if you're going to move forward with these inadequate buffers, you have to either engage in formal consultation, which is a bigger issue, or expand your buffers in future timber sales. But what neither agency did is retroactively apply it to all the timber sales in 2007, which had not yet been logged. And the Endangered Species Act clearly says if new science shows that the impact of an action is going to be greater than initially thought, you have a continuing duty to protect species. You have to go back and either change the action or reconsult. And so when we got a hold of the letter, and again, talking about sketchy agency action, I sent a Freedom of Information Act request to both the Forest Service and NMFS requesting all the consultation documents. And I got two replies, which were almost identical, except the NMFS one contained that letter of non-concurrence and the Forest Service one didn't. So that's how we found out about it last summer. And we saw this letter, we're like, wait a second, how is it that they've never told us and we don't know? We're huge stakeholders in the Mountain Hood National Forest and had actually asked them, so why aren't you doing programmatic consultation anymore? And they're like, oh, we don't know. Really? So when we found that and it was very clear that they had a legal duty to protect the species, that they were just probably hoping no one would notice, we had no choice really but to litigate. And so we did, and as soon as it got to an attorney who wasn't part of agency culture, they were like, you're right, we actually have no case, let's settle. And so, unfortunately, a number of those timber sales had already been logged, but we were able to expand the buffers on 9 timber sales in the Mountain Hood National Forest and the Salem BLM.
And 9 sales is 9 sales that you were able to expand, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's positive.
Yes.
It's definitely a victory, but it points to...
But it's a little poignant as well, because
exactly.
It means that there were critical habitat laws
right
that should not have happened.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. And it just goes further to, you know, the agency often asks us, like, point blank, why don't you trust us? Like, is that a rhetorical question? Or would you really like us to answer? Because continually we see them breaking the public trust. And it is our land.
Yeah.
You know, and another one of the memes that we like to avoid is when we say Forest Service land or BLM land. Like, that's not what it is. They are those supposed to be the land stewards and the land managers, but it's public land.
Mm-hmm.
And we really have, you know, it's an amazing thing. It's as close to the commons as we have in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And we're watching that being, you know, systematically sold away to the highest bidder, whether it's timber sales or now whether it's the campgrounds. And Begbie Hot Springs is now going to be sold away to the highest bidder for a concessionaire. And that just kind of strikes the heart at the public commons.
So looking at privatizing,
mm-hmm.
The management of recreational areas like Begbie is currently on the books.
Yeah, it's actually been something that's been talked about for some time now. A year ago, the Forest Service was planning to just go ahead and move ahead with privatizing the management of Begbie Hot Springs and the last 27 remaining publicly managed campgrounds in Mount Hood National Forest. They were going to do that without any public process or notice, and we raised a real stink about it and managed to get them to actually do that public process. They held an open house. They opened a comment period. Yesterday, the Forest Service announced that they've made the decision to go ahead and transfer management of Begbie and those 27 campgrounds to private concessionaires. So here we have an example where public resources are being managed for private profit, and along with that comes likely higher fees at these sites, possibly soaking fees at Begbie, and again, an erosion of trust in our, you know, in this agency to manage appropriately our public resources.
Well, I'm just going to break in for a minute to say this is Positively Revolting. I'm Lynn. I'm here with Ani, and we are here with Olivia Schmidt and Brenna Bell, and we have a caller, which we will get to and as soon as I give you the number to call for other people, 503-231-8187, I believe is the correct number.
You are so right.
Thank you very much.
We had a lot of numbers last week.
We did. For a long time, we had quite a few numbers.
And I do want to thank everyone who has joined KABU over our last couple weeks of membership drive madness. We certainly appreciate your support. We came actually extremely close to the goal of $100,000. We're about $13,000 shy or something close to that. So if, my dear friend, you were a procrastinator and not joining us yet, allow me to say, take this time to do it. You can go to the website right now, kboo.fm, and join us and help us fill in that last 13,000. Good morning, Crystal.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, friends.
Morning.
Good morning. So I'm the first one, and I'd also like to get my vote in as the first one for NIMF being the best acronym ever.
I think it really is, yeah.
I love what you do. It's so amazing. And yes, as Ani said earlier, it's really good to have this voice constantly around, you know, and to spread it further. And I think that's the best thing we can all do. I haven't followed you online for a while, but I have to say this is kind of an embarrassing story. I sort of jumped for joy when they said that the timber sales was being, you know, for the different counties and Oregon was being cut, and I thought this is actually a good thing because now citizens will take over the forest. And I just want to say that at Occupy, that was mentioned too, and I love it. I love you guys. Thank you, friends.
Thank you, Crystal.
All right.
Alrighty then.
And let's look at, again, looking at what it means to start inviting private management of public lands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a media activist, you know, I always I give these spiels monthly of public airwaves, right? And I always get to say, you know, the airwaves that we broadcast on are part of our common treasury, like public lands, like our streams, like our air. And then it always sort of hits me in that same level, and they're all, you know, more or less sold off to private interests. What does it mean when part of our public lands goes into private management? What does that mean for public access? What does that mean for comment about how the commons get used?
Well, I
love the significant conversation you two have with your eyebrows about who's going to answer what question. If only this were on webcam. Priceless. Okay.
Well, I'm actually going to take this in a slightly different direction than the concessionaires, because that in and of itself is a huge issue that we're working with, and what it means to have the management of our campgrounds and our recreation sites going into private hands. But it's not the only thing we're seeing on the Mount Hood National Forest. I want to bring up two other campaign issues that we're looking at, which incidentally tie into F-29.
I figured we'd tie some stuff sooner or later.
Currently, we're also dealing with the privatization of water coming off of Mount Hood National Forest.
Yes.
And Nestle trying to get the rights to springs near Cascade Locks that comes right out of Mount Hood and start bottling it. And that, is appalling on many levels. But again, the privatization of water, which is perhaps the most important public resource that comes off of Mount Hood, the most precious, the one we all need the most, is something that BARC has been fighting vigorously. And then we're also seeing PGE trying to put a large energy transmission corridor across Mount Hood National Forest and Willamette National Forest. It's part of a 230-mile corridor from Boardman Coal Plant to Salem that they're trying to push in. They're calling it the Cascade Crossing. And they're going to connect three more natural gas-powered plants and Boardman to Salem, and they're couching it in terms of needing to increase transmission for wind power, but the wind power is completely speculative, whereas the natural gas power is already being
built. On the ground, as it were.
And so, and the way that ties into F-29 is those two corporations are also part of ALEC, which is the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is the target of the corporation, the corporate target for F-29 is corporations that are part of ALEC, which is a body that is basically a corporate legislative writing body that gets state legislatures to pass laws that benefit corporations. And that's important for BARC because a lot of what we do is for federal public lands. Like, we're working with the Forest Service and the BLM. But both PGE and Nestle, these issues are also going in front of our state government. They need to get, the Water Resources Board is looking at Nestle, and there need to be energy permits from the state level. So the corporate influence over state level is also huge. And so we're kind of, all of a sudden, it used to be that forest issues seemed like timber sales, but now it's like this many-headed dragon, and we're having to learn water rights and energy transmission corridors and things like this, because increasingly corporate interests are looking at our national forests and saying, wow, timber's been incredibly successful at getting their needs met. How can we get our needs met by using public lands as well? And that's really challenging. And those corporate entities are a lot more savvy and have a lot more money and a lot harder to fight than the federal government, honestly.
I can imagine that Nestle is somehow or another a bigger a challenge.
Yeah.
They've been a giant for decades in, global health and welfare issues. So a known villain.
Right.
Let's go ahead and give that phone number out again. 503-231-8187 if you would like to call and join in our conversation. We encourage you to do so. I'm Ani. I'm here with Lynn. This is Positively Revolting. We encourage that, revolting in a positive manner. And we are here with a couple of folks from BARC, Defenders of Mount Hood National Forest. We have Olivia Schmidt, the program director, and we have Brenna Bell, whose title always escapes me, but it's ever so good.
NEPA coordinator. NEPA.
I just remember NEPA. Okay, NEPA coordinator and staff attorney. Awesome.
Yeah, and I would actually just add, if I can,
please,
to your question about what this means, the privatization of some of these resources, the management of recreation sites in Mount Hood. There are two things that jump to mind. One is, in reading the decision from the Forest Service on this particular issue, Bagby and these 27 campsites, the striking thing is that the Forest Service acknowledges in its decision that the public does not want this to happen, that there is evidence over and over again that people have diminished experience at campsites and recreation sites when they're managed by private concessionaires. but that they're doing it anyway. They're moving forward with the decision despite the acknowledgement that there's an overwhelming opposition to this by the public. The secondary thing that happens, which is probably more critical on a sort of policy level, is that, well, it's twofold. It's that the Forest Service, by not managing these sites themselves, will over time lose its institutional knowledge of recreation in Mount Hood National Forest. They won't have the staff dedicated to that work. And at the same time, the people coming in and hosting these sites aren't from the area. They're not, you know, they don't work for this agency.
Well,
they're
not familiar. Are there any regulations with them, or is it just Nelly bar the door?
Well, and that's something that's come up for us is, you know, there isn't a standard that, you know, some of the anecdotal evidence we've seen are actual increased public safety concerns at these sites when private managers come in, because there isn't things even as simple as like background checks for the folks that are going to be hosting these sites.
That's extraordinary.
But what's really concerning in the long term is that as Mount Hood National Forest releases their management of these sites, they don't have the sort of institutional driver to request that budget item for their own agency. Congress will have an easier time of diminishing that budget, and over time, what we may see is, you know, less and less money going to fund the recreation resources that the public rely on for accessible, low-cost, you know, outdoor recreation in places like Mount Hood National Forest.
That we are so famous for here in the Pacific.
Yeah, I mean, Mount Hood National Forest is unique. It's an urban forest. It gets millions of visitors every year. You know, this is just, from Bark's perspective, this is just, you know, a travesty and something that is not acceptable to us because of our goal to have quiet recreation be a specific priority for Mount Hood's management.
Wow. Well, we have a caller who actually lives in Mount Hood National Forest, Janice, I believe.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
Did you have a comment or question?
I have a question. I live on the Salmon River, and Green Canyon is a park that's a little known park and just barely managed out Salmon River Road. And if I hear explosions, how do I find out who...
Have you been hearing explosions?
Well, not this month. A couple months ago I did, though, before we had the really heavy snow. And I heard it from that direction, which is, you know, a few people live out there. But I just didn't know who to call. You know, I want to know, who's exploding? Because I think, you know, somebody would just come crack in the middle of my beautiful canyon.
Yeah.
This trail that is very well known. The Mazamas use it a lot.
Sure. Yeah, there are a couple things you can do. You can call your local regional district ranger office to report what's happening.
And that would be Zigzag for you.
Yeah.
And Hood River sometimes helps me more than Zigzag.
Yeah.
But I haven't ever asked them that type of question.
Yeah, you know, admittedly, law enforcement in Mount Hood National Forest is limited, but they do have people who answer their phones there during office hours, and reporting something like that, you know, they care about what's happening in those areas, and certainly public safety issues are of concern. You know, you're always welcome as a subsequent call to contact BARC to let us know what's going on. We often help local residents, you know, kind of parse out what's happening. We like to know what's going on in the forest. Our phone number is 503-331-0374, and we could, you know, at least look things up for you and give you more information at that point.
Because they like to stay busy, these BARC people.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, if I was in front of a computer, I could actually kind of search through this for you and help you.
It's too bad that I have to be spied on all the time. It's really a drag. I wanted to know if you work with, or what you think of, the organization Forest Service Employees for Environmental Ethics.
I've definitely interacted with them. We don't work with them on a regular basis, but I really appreciate their work. And Andy Stahl, who's their executive director, has just done amazing work at really promoting a different type of consciousness amongst Forest Service employees. Uh-huh. And sometimes they even sue the Forest Service, and I think that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I know they have won some rights for like firefighters to refuse to go into a situation that they think is just over the top.
So I'm definitely glad of their existence, but I wouldn't say that BARC has a close working relationship with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Well, thank you, Janice.
Yeah, great. I'm out here listening and watching.
That's right.
Excellent. I don't want to be knocked off my pins.
Okay, well, thank you
thank
so much.
You. Bye.
You take care.
And
503-231-8187, if you'd like to... Our engineering pixie's growing new arms trying to keep up with us.
Yes, indeed.
503-231-8187 if you'd like to join us this morning.
And if you'd like to continue listening to KABU coming up this morning on KABU, and I highly suggest it because at 9 and One Land, Many Voices, they are going to welcome dissident scholar and author Noam Chomsky for an hour-long interview on the shifting political landscape of the Middle East. Tune in for that. That'll be fun. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with our own Chris Andre. And at 10:15, Flashpoints features a conversation with Barbara Lubin of the Middle East Children's Alliance on the life in Gaza Strip, and a speech by David Radovich, research professor of education and author of The Death and Life of the Great American School System, which is a big topic. That's another good thing to listen to. And at 11, hear a special broadcast of Labor Radio featuring an interview with Vice President of the Oregon Education Association and a recent action in Salem and the fight to improve our schools. We also hear from an activist with the Longview Planning group of Occupy about port mobilizations and taking on corporations. And once again, thank you, KABU members, for your support. If you missed that...
Somehow
missed it, or just, you know, was in a procrastinating mood, you need to procrastinate no longer. Go to our website, kboo.fm, and click on that little Donate Now jar up there.
You'll feel better after you do. And so will we. So we have with us online now... Dulce, who says that they know what the blasts are about. Good morning. You're on the air.
This is community radio.
I love this communication in community radio. Good morning.
Hi. I live in the area. And just for the previous caller, probably what the blasts she heard were the ski bowl. Ski bowls had to blast for the snow that's been heavily accumulated, and it sounds like it's right next door, but it's actually on up at Ski Bowl, and that's probably what she heard recently, because I live on Barlow Trail Road and can hear it at my house, too.
So this is like avalanche protection?
Right.
However, yeah, they Olivia's looking quizzical.
Yeah, well, that's one option, but, you know, another option is, for instance, sometimes when trees fall, which... And all this rain, we've had a lot of trees that slide down over our trails and stuff. And actually, sometimes it's less invasive to blast the root wad to remove it from the trail than cut it. So that's another possibility. But recently, we've heard blasts from the snow for avalanche prevention.
Yeah, and to be clear, it's not that I don't believe you. I'm just thinking, I would hate to think that's happening out there.
That prevents avalanches.
Right.
That does, too.
Just trying to imagine explosions happening at Ski Bowl. That was what the look on my face was. Oh,
it was a visual thing for you, wasn't it?
Yeah. It releases overhang so it doesn't come down and kill people. So
makes good sense. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a whole nother topic, but that's regular stuff in snow
Whole
management.
Whole other ball of snow, huh?
But anyway, I've lived here since 81, a week before Mount St. Helens blew up, and I wanted to thank the gals there for BARC. It's good to have organizations that are kind of overseeing things, and that's great. But I also wanted to mention that in the 80s, we used to see log trucks going down the road here with, you know, three or even one log filling up the truck. Mm-hmm. So it has gotten way better than it was in the 80s as far as the logging intensity and, you know, the large trees going down. So that's been good. And I also wanted to...
Is it maybe just that there aren't any more large trees?
See, that's what I was going to say.
Well, there's a little bit of that, but actually the demand has gone down substantially. Back in the 80s, a lot of logs were sent to Japan. They were the big purchaser, and they would just sink them in their bays and then use them later and then build stuff and send it back to us. So that's changed. I also wanted to mention a little thing that is a pet peeve of mine, too, when private concessionaires take over the campgrounds. And, yes, there is kind of issues on the quality of people and that sort of thing. But I have a lot of friends that work for the Forest Service, and so I have to take both sides of the fence here, and I can't believe I'm defending them a little bit. But a big problem with the Forest Service, and particularly, and I know in the Zigzag District, is lack of funding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in the time since I've been here, when I first was here, there were several trails crews, there were several fire prevention crews, and the amount of personnel has just shrunk amazingly. And when people retire from jobs now, their job isn't filled, it's just divvied up to already overworked employees because there's just no money coming from the feds. And that's the problem, too, with the campground management. It's cheaper for them to put out bids to concessionaires than for them to do it, and they don't have the funding. So, I don't know, that's a big, broad thing, you know.
Yeah,
my answer would be cut back the military and give it to the, you know, the Forest Service, but... just on their side a little bit, it's they are so tight on funding and so overworked, so we got to give them a little bit of slack in that area.
Right. I appreciate you bringing that up, and I will say, you know, we understand that it is real budget constraints that are causing this to even be considered in Mount Hood National Forest.
It's horrible.
And it's those budget issues that have caused them to privatize management of a variety of resources. You know, the Forest Service doesn't have its own roads crew, as an example, anymore.
No, we just lost ours in Zigzag recently.
Right.
So now when there's big holes, I'm an avid cyclist, when there's big holes in the road, you report it. And they, you know, again, bring in people from outside to fill the holes. It takes some time, but it gets done usually.
Right.
But yeah, they have to share road crews now. It's crazy.
Yeah, and so, you know, in response to that, BARC, on the one hand, challenges decisions that are bad with Mount Hood, but we also do proactive work. We lobby our congressional delegation to allocate funds for these resources. We often, and one of the things that's so challenging about this concessionaire thing is that, you know, what we really like to see is the Forest Service finding a way to be more creative about how they address these issues, partnering with volunteers and non-governmental organizations that can help them sort of levy those costs by providing support. You know, that none of that is easy, but you're right. The budget is the driving factor behind these issues. And BARC, for our part, does what we can to support, you know, budget requests and get Congress to allocate funds for these resources. And, you know, like I said before, if we go down the path of not maintaining those services through that agency, it's going to get harder and harder to get that funding.
I agree. And then the idea of having volunteer and NGOs come in and do a lot of the work is a great idea. And I've asked some friends of mine in the Forest Service about that. And there is a lot of that. There's a lot of volunteer work. But then that takes Forest Service people to oversee and make sure that they're doing, understand the job and are doing it properly. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they don't have a person to do that.
Right.
So,
all right. Hey, thanks very much for your call this morning.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We have just a few minutes left. I want to make sure that listeners have a way of staying involved or getting involved with issues around our public lands and forest defense. So... How do folks do that?
Well, you can visit our website, which is www.barkout.org. It's BARK-OUT.org. There's lots of information there about what we do. You can sign up for our monthly newsletter, our e-newsletter, so that you'll get information about, you know, really up-to-date, pertinent things that are happening, action opportunities. Join us on a hike on a second Sunday. We meet at the Trader Joe's in the Hollywood District on Northeast Halsey. And then, you know, there's always ways to take action, and you can find a lot of that on our website, either through the articles that are posted on the front page or by contacting us directly.
And final thoughts about actions upcoming this week, and again, that interconnectedness of all things, staying on top of the ALEC corporations.
Mm-hmm.
Brenna, a couple of last words from you?
I think that... Generally, we're in a really exciting time in terms of activism.
I agree.
And, you know, forest activism itself has had a bit of a lull recently. And in part, one of the lulls is because those large trees are gone and people's hearts aren't engaged as much. But I would really love for all the urban action that's happening and for the street actions that are happening next week and are continuing to happen, people to remember that the forest is the heart of what gives us the ability to live here in Portland. It's where our water comes from. It's where our air comes from. And if we don't connect the fact that we need to be mindful of, you know, what's happening on the forest and the way that the corporate interests are influencing the government, influencing the budget, removing our public resources, at the same time as we're doing street actions and talking about occupation and talking about how to do the movement here, if we lose that connection that's so important, I think we've lost a bit. And I just want to make sure that we're being really mindful that all of this is, you know, kind of a package that we're being forced to take, that our resources are more important for private corporations than for the people. Their lives are more important for private corporations than the people. And we need to step back and, you know, hey, occupy our forests. You know, they're ours. And if we remember, you know, that they're ours and remember the spirit that lives in them and that sometimes we can forget, I personally find just getting into the woods incredibly enlivening. And it increases my ability to do the actions back here. And so, yes, I'll be in the streets next week, but I'll be in the woods the week after. And balancing those two out and, you know, fighting for our right to have public resources and public land remain in the commons rather than the hands of the corporations, I think is really important.
Couldn't agree more.
And that they're not just a resource either. Mm-hmm. They're a living thing.
Right.
Yeah, as you've alluded to, that spirit of the forest, I think, is something that we cannot gloss over.
Right.
Yeah, and we certainly have to remember that the forest doesn't just serve humans, you know?
Right.
It has an intrinsic quality of its own, whether we are there or not, whether we're drinking its water or not, you know, it needs to be there.
There are values way greater than money.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And
the term ecosystem actually means something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
System.
It's
yes,
system.
Got it.
Well, look at this. Another. We're running short on show, as Lisa Loving would say. And time. And thank you to both so much, Olivia Schmidt and Brenna Bell, for being here with us this morning. You guys were very awake and lively, and I thank you. And it disseminated an immense amount of information, and I thank you very much.
A fact-filled hour. So thanks very much. We'll be back.
Next week,
we call it. Woo-hoo. Yes, next week. And until then, continue to be positively revolting. And see y'all on Wednesday.